Chapter 9: What human functions and characteristics seem to you most likely to be biologically determined and hereditary in relation to intelligence? Intelligence and related factors. Most of the external behaviors we see people perform are not biologically determined. However, the capacity, the potential to perform the various tasks that human beings carry out, are biologically determined. That is, our sense organs, limbs, and our powerful brains are all biologically determined. This gives us the capacity to learn how to perform various tasks. Our ability to learn and use language is biologically determined, but we must be exposed to appropriate environmental conditions to learn language. This capacity is seen when we compare chimpanzees that were trained to use sign language with a 3-year-old human. The child's linguistic skills are far superior to the well-trained chimpanzee. Our great potential to use language is primarily the result of the superior evolutionary development of the human brain. The advanced development of the vocal cords and hands are also components that facilitate our linguistic abilities. Hands are used in language, such as in writing and sign language. Our hands and superior brain provide the capacity to learn and carry out extremely complicated mathematical calculations. This ability includes the capacity to learn mathematical reasoning and how to use symbolic logic to solve problems. Our hands give us the capacity to manipulate objects in a very precise way. This and our superior brain give us a capacity to make and use tools in a manner that is much greater than any living creature that ever walked the earth. This ability, coupled with the great capacity to use language and mathematics, lead to the development of superhuman technologies, which permit us to use external energy sources to do work, build skyscrapers that are as high as mountains, fly through the air, travel through space, cure disease, build cities, and create computers that can do many millions of calculations a second. But the point is that all of the above are potential abilities that can only develop into a true capability under appropriate environmental conditions. Without such conditions, man is much like other primates. The individuals who grow up under isolated conditions will not be able to speak a language. They may make sounds with the vocal mechanism just as other animals do. People who grow up in very primitive cultures have a language that does not involve reading or writing. They can count but cannot perform any type of sophisticated mathematical calculations. They have the ability to make and use simple tools and fire. But their overall development is only one level above the other primates. People who grow up in underdeveloped cultures that are severely impoverished may develop at a level that is just above a primitive culture. Poor people in our own society might develop to a level that is not much better, which might include a 5th grade reading and writing level. Thus, human beings have a biologically determined capacity to develop many skills and intellectual capabilities, but such development depends on the environment. In spite of the above information, which is widely known, many individuals, including some psychologists, have argued that the variations in capability amongst people from different socioeconomic environments and cultures are really the result of genetic differences. Often these arguments are used as a rationalization for racist policies, or as an excuse not to help the poor. Such arguments fail because all of our ancestors come from such environments. That is, some of us can go back 1 or 2 generations and see ancestors that were functional illiterates. Some of us must go back several generations to find similar levels of academic incompetence. In almost all cases, if we go back 3,000 years, we would find that all our ancestors were illiterate, and if we go back 10,000 years, we find that our relatives were primitive people who lived in a way that was similar to other animals. This relatively short time interval is not a long enough period for the evolutionary process to evolve a superior human physiology, such as a better brain and hands. Thus, our ancestors of 10,000 years ago had the same intellectual capacities that we have, but environmental conditions were not favorable to develop the intellectual abilities that we have. In addition, there are many college-educated people throughout the world who have living ancestors who were born into primitive pre-literate cultures, such as certain American Indians and some African individuals. And no doubt there are some individuals that were born into such cultures that graduated college, such as infants who were born into primitive cultures and adopted by educated Americans or Europeans. Thus, if we look at history, we find that the variations in intelligence in human beings are primarily the result of different levels of environmental development. However, this does not mean that there is not a very significant genetic component involved with intelligence, but what is obtained from genetics is only a capacity to become intelligent. Thus, intelligence is not the direct result of heredity. If an individual was born with tremendous capacities to become intelligent, but his environment was extremely impoverished intellectually, emotionally, as well as economically, he might not even learn basic linguistic skills, if he survived at all. and of course individuals with severe genetic abnormalities, which limit mental functions, will not be able to perform the intellectual tasks of a 10-year-old, no matter how favorable the environment is. However, one of the primary points of this paper is that in our world, environments vary far more than genetics, in relation to intelligence. The above assumes that we are excluding extremely unusual environments and abnormal genetics. Extremely unusual environments means here rare situations that are not related to any of the socioeconomic or cultural divisions found in society. Abnormal genetics means here genetic variations that cause detectable neurological differences, which generally include a visible variation in brain structure. We know from history and current events that environments vary far more than the genetically determined capacity. The above is obvious when we think of all the different cultures and economic conditions in the United States. Environmental differences become even more apparent when we think of cultural and economic variations throughout the world. This was clearly illustrated in the preceding paragraphs using the variations of culture, history, and poverty. A conservative counter-argument is that people in impoverished cultures are in such circumstances because of genetic inferiority. But this argument fails because we know when individuals or their ancestors from impoverished cultures are educated, they eventually do as well as educated white Americans and Europeans. I notice an interesting contradiction in the conservative view, which states that those in impoverished cultures and environments are intellectually inferior because of genetic limitations. These conservative individuals also generally believe in cutting educational programs and other support services for the poor. If those in impoverished cultures were truly genetically inferior, the appropriate response would be to provide additional funding for special education programs to try to correct or circumvent the genetic deficiencies. This is done in middle and upper class communities with individuals who have intellectual deficits that are believed to be of a physiological nature. Such individuals can even complete college in some cases, if the deficit is not too severe and they receive special services to circumvent their handicaps. Of course, with more severe cases, the best that can be obtained is significant improvements in overall intellectual performance. Hence, people who truly are inferior as a result of biological deficiencies can be greatly improved by expensive special educational services. Thus, the conservative view of cutting educational and other support services for the poor is a contradiction, if they truly believe that the poor have biological deficiencies. I believe that the contradiction of the conservative view can be explained in psychological terms. The belief that impoverished cultures are genetically inferior serves as a rationalization to minimize guilt and other negative consequences. If people are poor because they are innately inferior, nobody has to feel guilty about the problem. The conservative might try to see the poor as a natural condition of nature, which cannot and should not be corrected. Of course, the real motive is that he does not want to pay for the difficulties of poverty with higher taxes. If the conservative tells himself this, he will feel guilty. If he tells others that his primary concern is his own financial interest, or the financial interest of people similar to himself, he will face negative consequences. If he is a private citizen, he will be thought of by many people as a selfish, unsympathetic person. If he is a political candidate, he will lose support from some of the more liberal voters. Thus, I believe the conservative view is a rationalization used to save money without feeling guilty and avoiding negative reactions from the more liberal sector of society. The way to argue with such conservatives is to agree with them and state that we must spend much more money to try to circumvent the inferiority of the poor. Of course, this would probably not really solve the problem because the conservative does not want to pay to correct the problems of poor people, which seem to be alien to our middle-class culture. Such a conservative is not likely to feel empathy for people who seem so different from her family and friends. That is, if people who she perceived to be similar to herself were in poverty, she would feel empathy and probably would support programs to help them. But people who appear very different are less likely to elicit any empathy in a middle-class conservative that wants a tax reduction. The conservatives very often point to studies that have been done on identical twins using IQ tests as a measure of intelligence. Even if such methods are valid, and many researchers believe they are, they do not prove that intelligence is hereditary. It proves that there are genetic components involved with intelligence, which are factors that are needed to develop intelligence. Such studies also suggest that these genetic components vary somewhat in the general population. I believe that the studies done on identical twins do not have much to do with the realities that cause variations in academic and IQ performance in the general population. Such differences are caused by the extreme variations in the environments that people commonly grow up in. Many of these studies compare twins that were in the same environment. In some cases, the identical twins were separated at an early age into different environments. Generally, the difference in environment was relatively small, such as working class and middle class, with the cultural components remaining essentially the same. Commonly, environments can vary from upper class to extreme poverty. In addition, there are extreme cultural variations in environments, which include different languages, customs, and varying degrees of emphasis on academic performance. One component that is often ignored is the emotional impact of the environment on the individual in relation to academic performance and IQ scores. Factors such as the attitude of parents, the attitudes of people in the neighborhood, emotional stress, and similar factors can most likely have a great influence on the development of intelligence. All of these environmental variations can greatly influence intellectual performance and IQ scores. The identical twin studies have not dealt with such environmental variations. Such studies are limited because there are not many identical twins that are separated at birth into the many different environments that commonly exist in our world. If there were enough identical twins to do an accurate study, I believe they would find that the determining factors of academic achievement, IQ scores, and occupational level are primarily determined by environment. Thus, I believe that the difference between occupational achievement is not genetic. The reason one individual becomes a janitor, a waiter, doctor, or scientist is the result of environment. The difference between individuals with lower and higher occupational achievement, such as janitor and doctor, is the educational, cultural, and emotional factors in the environments that they grew up in. This does not mean they are all equally intelligent. The professionals are most likely more intelligent than the janitor or waiter, especially in relation to academic subjects. However, the difference in intelligence is the result of many years of development, starting from early childhood through the most advanced levels of professional training. That is, intelligence is developed with experiences that relate to learning and problem solving. The professionals no doubt had more learning and problem solving experiences, as far as academic material is concerned. Individuals with a conservative view about intelligence would of course disagree with the above. The conservative would insist that the difference in occupational achievement and adult IQ scores are primarily the result of genetics. A more moderate view would be that the difference between a low-status person, such as a janitor, and a professional, such as a doctor, is essentially the result of both genetics and environment. These arguments fail because there are many immigrant janitors and similar low-status workers who come from a long line of peasants who raised children who became professionals. My view will become clearer if I define the word intelligence. The conservative might define the concept in terms of IQ. She might say a high IQ is intelligence. But the concept of intelligence was known for thousands of years before IQ tests were invented. Thus, IQ is not a good definition. It is in reality a method of measuring intelligence, which on the average is only moderately accurate at best. My definition of intelligence contains 12 components. Thus, intelligence is all of the following: 1. The ability to learn with the use of language. 2. The ability to learn material that does not involve language. Examples are learning how to draw engineering diagrams, put something together, create a work of art with clay, etc. 3. The ability to comprehend ideas with the use of language. 4. The ability to comprehend relationships that do not involve language. Examples are an understanding of artistic relationships, geometric relationships, how a physical structure is held together, etc. 5. The ability to find and use linguistically coded information. This includes the ability to find any type of written information. 6. The ability to find and use information of a non-linguistic nature. This can include finding information of an experiential nature by trial and error or experimentation. 7. The ability to reorganize information into new ideas with the use of language. This includes the ability to create new hypothetical models, original written text, poems, etc. 8. The ability to reorganize non-verbal information into new structures. This can involve any type of creativity that is not primarily based on language, such as designing a new entity, building any structure, or any type of artwork. 9. The ability to use language in the problem-solving process. 10. The ability to solve non-verbal problems. This can include repairing an electrical device, solving engineering problems with graphics, putting a puzzle together, etc. 11. The ability to learn mathematical concepts. 12. The ability to solve mathematical problems. The greater the ability, the higher the intelligence. This applies to all 12 components. The 12 components and related factors are learned. This becomes obvious when we think of the rare individual who grew up in extreme isolation. Such an individual generally has not learned any language in 5 of the above components. 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. Obviously involve the use of language. And less obviously, two other components, 11, 12, involve a mathematically related language. The components that involve language are primarily stressed in school and are the primary criteria for academic success in most courses. From the above, it becomes obvious that linguistic skills are a major factor in intelligence. It is obvious that people can improve their skills with language with study and practice. We also know that it is possible to learn an entire language in high school or college. Thus, this factor of intelligence is obviously learned and can be improved with practice. The ability to learn verbal 1 and non-verbal 2 information increases with practice. We learn how to learn from experience. We also might learn better techniques of learning from books and courses that deal with the subject. The ability to understand new ideas 3 and 4 are the result of prior learning, especially as it relates to similar concepts and experiences. The ability to find and use information 5 and 6 is also the result of learning and practice. We learn where to find information and how to use the information to achieve our goal. We learn how to use information for various purposes, such as supporting our views with information from other sources. We learn how to organize information into a clearly written document. The ability to reorganize information into new ideas 7 and 8 is learned from experience. This skill can also be learned from books on creative thinking. Problem solving 9 and 10 is also learned. We learn how to solve problems from many of the courses taught in school, especially science subjects. We also learn problem solving from experience. The ability to learn mathematical concepts and solve mathematical problems 11 and 12 is the result of an accumulated knowledge of mathematical postulates and theorems. Experience in solving many different types of mathematical problems is also a primary factor in developing advanced mathematical skills. Thus, intelligence is clearly the result of environmental experiences that facilitate learning the above skills. I believe that most people are born with a tremendous capacity to develop these skills. However, I am not saying that everybody has the same capacity, but I am saying that most people have an excess capacity, which is usually only partly developed. Thus, the variation in capacity is not the limiting factor in most cases. My perspective on intelligence is not the most popular view. A more widely accepted idea is that intelligence is partly determined by environment and partly determined by heredity. This belief is based on defining intelligence in terms of IQ scores. When intelligence is defined in this way, the definition of intelligence is changed, but it allows a method of measuring the concept. With such a definition, it is possible to apply mathematical principles as we do with physics and chemistry to the evaluation of intelligence. However, physics and chemistry are dealing with very simple entities and human beings, and their intelligence is a very complicated reality. The physicist and chemist are often dealing with entities that cannot be seen directly. It is not possible to accurately evaluate the behavior of individual atoms and subatomic particles. The physicist or chemist often must study many trillions of particles simultaneously to obtain accurate information. It is not possible to trace the history of a single atom through a lifetime. If it was possible to chart the history of a single atom, little information would be obtained, because atoms are very simple entities that do not permanently change in response to time and environment. So for these sciences, special methods were developed. However, the limitations and simplicity that the chemist and physicist face are not the same type of challenge that the psychologist is confronted with. The psychologist can accurately observe the behavior of a single individual, and he can study all the relevant environmental factors in great detail. The psychologist could look at history of various groups of people and see how education and other environmental factors changed each succeeding generation. The psychologist can experiment with one individual at a time. A relatively small group of individuals can be used to obtain accurate experimental data. Thus, the psychologist is not limited to the statistical limitations and distorted definition of intelligence inherent in IQ methods of studying intelligence. I believe the most revealing methods to study intelligence is to study the history of different cultural groupings and the changes that resulted from environmental improvements and education. When this is done, the mythology associated with intelligence will be revealed and discarded.